This is episode 11 of Spiral Marketing, and today's guest, who I'll introduce properly in a moment, has a unique experience with marketers and CEOs alike. He has the experience working with some of the world's best tech brands. Also, he has produced events with speakers who teach the most effective sales and business development how to be even more effective.
What is the DNA of business marketing? How do we market ourselves now and in the future? Brand communications is evolving. Are you? Let's explore together. Spiral upwards. This is Spiral Marketing.
Fred Diamond is the founder of the Institute for Excellence in Sales, which produces regular events to promote best practices and thought leadership in corporate and organizational sales and business development. Diamond is recognized as the leading go-to market strategy consultant in the Mid-Atlantic region to growing high-tech and professional services firms, and has helped numerous organizations grow their sales efforts through excellence in go-to market strategy at organizations ranging from Apple, Compaq, and Microsoft to growing stars such as Contact Solutions and Pleasant Valley Business Solutions. Welcome, Fred.
Carl, it's good to be here.
It's great to have you here. It seems like your IES events regularly fill the USA Today auditorium. And as a fellow event planner and producer, I can attest to the fact that when you work on an event with speakers, you get deeper access into their messages. You have an opportunity to get deeper into the insights and really learn. So with your experience building the Institute, I'm particularly excited to hear your perspective of what comes to the top of your mind to speak on.
Well, that's great. I'm thrilled to be here. And as you know, my company, Diamond Strategic Marketing, helps companies figure out their marketing strategy. But more important is their sales strategy and how to generate revenue and how to bring business. Hence why a marketing consultant created the Institute for Excellence in Sales.
And you created it, right?
I did. I have a co-founder, but we both put our time and energy in. We've had a lot of great people involved with us. Plenty of members and other speakers. So it's just been a great opportunity to get many more people involved with what we're trying to do.
Sure. And I should say that we've had not one, but two guests on the Spiral Marketing podcast that were previously your speakers. That's Colleen Stanley and Lisa Norell.
Exactly. Colleen Stanley wrote the book Emotional Intelligence for Sales Success. Fabulous, fabulous speaker. And Lisa Norell wrote, of course, The Mindful Marketer. And she's a good friend of the Institute as well.
Yeah, they were both great. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So first of all, you've got an interesting message today. And I'm not sure that I can do a proper job introducing it because it's really your message from your experience. It's bridging the gap between the marketing department and marketing executives to the C-suite. Do I have that right?
Yeah, basically my company's motto is marketing that doesn't lead to revenue reward is a huge waste of time and money. So basically the whole purpose is that marketers need to truly understand the goals, business, and direction of their company as compared to, is this a good marketing activity or should we do this event? Let me give you an example. I met with a potential client recently. And their question to me was, should we invest $15,000 in a tool that will help build our Twitter followers? That was the question.
Okay.
My answer was, I have no idea. Who are you trying to reach? What is your marketing strategy? Who's your ideal client? Starting with the tactic. And the problem is, Carl, it still happens today. Books have come out over the years talking about really where to focus on, and yet today, there's still too many people who are focusing on the wrong things. And unfortunately, it gives marketing a black eye, I believe.
That's a great story and very interesting topic. Ever since I heard you first speak about that sort of casually, I've noticed that problem more and more. It's probably always been true, but I think it's very relevant and it's going to be great for our listeners. Would you like to give a story about your background and maybe when you first noticed the issue?
I'll give you a great story. I've been very lucky to have worked for some of the biggest brands in technology. We talked about Apple Computer, Compaq, a large software company called CompuWare, and Microsoft has been a client as well. When I was at Compaq, I was a director for Compaq's public sector business, specifically the federal side.
Right.
This was in the mid-90s, and people were spending a lot of money on advertising. So we had done a campaign, cost about $2 million to advertise to government employees and government customers. The guy who was our president of our division was a retired rear admiral in the Navy.
Okay.
And he came to me and he said, why are we spending all this money on advertising? Now, mind you, Carl, I was a younger marketing person at that time. I had more hair. And this was a guy who was probably, you know, my father's age, president of the division. And I was like, well, of course you need to advertise because advertising is the way to get a larger message to a larger audience. And it covers a lot of bases and we can reach more people with print advertising, which was very, very big at the time. Of course, print has significantly come down since then.
Right.
He said, okay, that's great. Why are we spending all this money on advertising? I said, I'll get back to you. So Compaq was based in Houston at the time. That's when I was working out of Houston. Our ad agency was based on Madison Avenue in New York City. I booked a trip, first class, up to Madison Avenue to spend some time with our ad agency. And I called them and I said, I'm not going to mention his name, but the president of our division doesn't get why we're advertising. And everybody's like, oh, great, you know. So we scheduled a meeting. We put together this PowerPoint with all these data, facts about the value of advertising, et cetera. And we presented this, created this great PowerPoint, flew back down to Houston, scheduled a meeting, went through this presentation of the value of advertising. President of the division said, gee, that's great. Why are we spending all this money on advertising? So now we're saying, oh, he doesn't get it. Oh, my God, what's going on here, you know? But then I took a step back and I said, you know what? Why are we spending all this money on advertising? Should we be spending all this money on this particular marketing tactic? Because it's a common marketing tactic to do. I then did all this research on our addressable marketplace. Who truly were we trying to sell to? And I realized that we weren't trying to sell to this market called the government. We were really trying to sell to two agencies because of the opportunity and also a couple of sub-agencies and some other departments. So now our market wasn't this huge market. It was maybe a $400 million division of the government. So the question then became is what's the best way to get to those customers? And it was no longer to do this mass advertising campaign. It was some directed campaigns, add some salespeople. It was just way before the internet and Twitter and things like that, but maybe do some events at those agencies where those customers are. So all of a sudden, my marketing plan went from broad awareness type of marketing via advertising to very, very specific activities to drive business. And our president of the division said, you know what? He goes, I don't need advertising. I have nothing against advertising. But you, as a marketing director, need to think, how are you driving our goals, which at the time was to go from 20 million to about a half a billion in business. And it wasn't to make everybody aware of us. It was to make the needle move to the right.
Right. That's great.
It is great because it totally changed my mind. It totally changed the 50 people I've had who worked for me since then. And now they're able to think, how am I as a marketer driving the main goals of the company, which typically are to grow revenue or to increase business.
And that's how you stay passionate about this topic, isn't it? Because it just has stayed relevant throughout your career since then.
Every CEO I've ever reported to, every CEO, Carl, I've ever had as a client has wanted to grow at a minimum the top line of the business. It's not to become the number one advertiser. It's to sell a lot more of what they make. Software, professional services, cybersecurity applications, computers, you know, encryption devices, whatever it might be.
Great. Well, I definitely want to dig right into this topic. But before we do, I would be remiss not to ask you a few questions about your leadership style. We like to focus on leadership as well as the marketing topic, because I think it helps people get some perspective on the guest's topic and give some context for how to grow as well. So, Fred Diamond, what inspires your style of leadership?
That's a great question. Thank you very much for asking that. I like to get things done. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people say that I'm extremely hardworking. I want people to focus on the mission. What really are we trying to achieve? When I work with my clients, for example, I try to get very, very focused on what is your goal? What do you really, really want to achieve from this business? Is it just a lifestyle type business where you want to make enough money to support 15, 20 employees? Or do you want to become number one in your marketplace? So, you know, let's really think with the goal in mind. Where are we trying to get to? And as a consultant, my mission is to help my clients achieve their goals. So I get very, very focused on where do you want to go and how can I help you get there?
Excellent.
By the way, it's a lot of fun to talk into these microphones.
Yeah. It seems like it takes you back to your radio days, huh?
It does. And like people said, I have a face for radio. So I'm happy to be here.
Well, good. In line with your leadership style, is there a practice or study that helps keep you sharp in your work? Could also be a question that you like to ask yourself.
That is great. And I'll give you two examples of that. I frequently ask myself, would Donald Trump be doing this? And say what you will about Donald Trump, he's a winner. So is this something that Donald Trump, there's another businessman in town who's very, very successful, Joel sold his company. His name is Jay Nussbaum, was the head of Oracle's government division for a number of years. He recently just sold his company, Agilex, very, very successful software agile development company. He's one of our board of advisor members for the Institute for Excellence in Sales. And I say to myself, would Jay be doing this? Would Jay be at this event? Or how would Donald or Jay be making this decision? So very, very focused on, you know, really trying to make the right decisions in line again with where we want to get to and what the goals might be. Back to the leadership question, yeah. I'm also very, to be frank with you, I'm also very funny. But a lot of people say I have a very, very deadpan sense of humor. So, you know, poker face, if you will. So I really often try to bring levity, but I'm also very, very serious about my client's commitment. And the fact that whenever someone spends money on something, I'm very, very conscious of the fact that when you spend money on something, there's a large level of commitment that you're making. That should be taken quite seriously.
Sure. Do you mind if I ask about the name?
My name, Fred? Yeah. I was named after my grandmother.
There's the deadpan. I see. Yes. Your last name is really Diamond.
Yeah. And you know, Fred Diamond. And when I used to DJ, people would ask me that question all the time. And I would say, well, actually, my real name is Danny Diamond. But that's a joke.
I see.
And I used to use that line all the time. Yeah, but were you asking me about the name of the Institute or about...
No, your name specifically, Fred Diamond. I assumed that Fred was your name, but I wasn't sure if Diamond was a stage name.
No, my father was last name Diamond. That's a family name.
Okay, very good. Okay, so let's start with the C-suite. What is the message to the C-suite and what do they need to know?
Here's the other thing that I've learned. The buck stops with the CEO of the company. Every company I've been at, as large as Compaq, CompuWare, Apple, at the end of the day, everything went up to the executive, the number one guy, the CEO. So now when I deal with a lot of clients that are much smaller, small to medium-sized technology and professional services companies, yeah, they may give people in the organization the authority to make certain decisions, but they all go to the CEO.
Sure.
And almost invariably, the CEO has growth goals, at least for the types of companies that we work with. Mm-hmm. So their goal, again, like I mentioned before, it's not to be the number one advertiser. It's not even to be the number one brand. It's not even have a certain level of awareness. It's will this help us reach our goals, which is typically something tied to revenue. We want to go from 20 million to 50 million, or we want to go from 75 million to 200 million, or half a billion to a billion, or even 2 to 5 million. Mm-hmm. But usually there's that number they want to get to. And there's some other goals as well. You know, we want to bring new products to market. We're a services company, but we want to bring products to market. The key point here is he or she is where the buck stops, and he or she is thinking in terms of business. They're not thinking in terms of marketing. They're thinking in terms of where do we want to be taking the business and
sure.
how do we get there.
Okay. And is there something that they should be asking themselves or looking at to determine whether or not they might have a problem in the divide between their marketing team and their goals?
Yes. So for the CEO, they need to clearly communicate their vision. The marketing team needs to understand where we're going. And in a small to medium-sized company, the vision is usually in the CEO's head somewhere. And in some cases, it's clear. And in other cases, it's not clear. So I believe a lot of times my goal as the CMO of many companies, chief marketing officer, is to get the CEO's vision into the marketplace. And conversely, to give some feedback or where there may be some problems with it, maybe where the market doesn't accept it. But one of the key goals of marketing is to get the CEO's vision in the marketplace and to help generate business as it relates to the vision.
Okay. And in those initial meetings, are there questions that you generally like to ask them that might help or sort of poke and prod, if you will, to learn what their vision is and if whether or not it might be communicating itself properly into the marketplace?
That's a great question. So, for example, I work with a lot of technology companies and professional services companies, and we're based here in Northern Virginia for your listeners around the world. And a lot of the companies, before I start working with them, they look like any other type of IT company. They all basically look the same, even though they might have a certain unique value proposition. And usually when they come to work with us, there's something there that the marketplace isn't doing that they do, but it's not displayed either through the web or through the materials or through PowerPoints or even speaking to the audience, you know, the customers or employees. So a lot of our job at first is to get that out of them. What is the true, sometimes it's even, Carl, it's a niche within a niche within a niche.
Right.
But that can make you a $10, $20, $50 million company if the market's large enough and if you do all the right type of execution.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to get that out there. You got to, as trite as it might sound, you got to really figure out what the differentiation is and really begin to display and demonstrate it. In the tech and services world, for example, and in other engineering like food creation and those types of industries, if you will, warehousing, distribution, most of the CEOs and business leaders don't come from the marketing ranks. And a lot of cases, they don't even come from the sales ranks. They'll come from engineering, development, the guys and ladies who are creating technology companies. They all come from engineering, development, application development, implementation. So they think with the left side of the brain, mm-hmm. okay? So they think in terms of, you know, analytics, analysis, the technology as compared to being able to communicate it. It's a rare CEO I found who comes from that world who can also clearly and crisply, in layman's terms, communicate the value of what they do. So they think it's technology. They have to be thinking and talking in those types of terms. Mm-hmm. It's part of the marketing job to help them bring it down. People say, well, your grandmother should understand your value prop. Well, your grandmother is the wrong example.
She's probably not the market.
She probably isn't. Exactly. Good response. So I hate whenever people say, well, it should be clear enough that your grandmother understands. Well, if your grandmother's a CIO of American Airlines, maybe. But they don't come from that space. That's why they're sometimes a little short with marketing, because they don't necessarily see all the value, because two reasons. One is their marketers have historically underserved them, like we're talking about today. And secondly, that's not where they're coming from. They're coming from the bits and bytes, and it's a great product. It should sell itself. If you build it, they will come, you know, all those types of notions, if you will. So the marketer needs to understand that. The marketer needs to understand that people who are creating those types of companies and who have gotten to the CEO type of level, they're usually a pretty, pretty strong technologist or business executor, and the marketing people need to crisp out and get that message back differently into the marketplace.
That's great.
Thanks. A lot of cases, the CEO may be impatient that not everyone's getting their message. The marketing team needs to be astute to the fact that they are there basically to serve.
Right.
It's not about the marketing activity. It's about serving the CEO and the company to help it reach its business goals. Mm-hmm. So they need to be aware of, how do I learn more about my CEO or my business leader's communication strategy? One thing I've done for the last decade or so is I carry a recording device with me, and I record a lot of my conversations. It's even great now because there's automated transcription software. So I can record it and then transcribe it and then reread, re-listen to my conversations to ensure that I'm getting the nuance of what they're trying to say. So it's incumbent upon the marketing organization and the communications teams to be aware of that and to work extremely more diligently, to work hard to understand where the CEO is coming from, and then shift his messaging so it's more attainable.
Great. Great. Well, there's a blend of value there, both from the C side and the marketing side. Should we speak more directly to the marketer's perspective now? What do you feel like the marketers need to understand that's different from the conversation so far? Or do you feel like we've covered it?
We've hit on some of it. A couple of key points. Once again, the marketer needs to understand why are they there. And it's not to create interesting marketing things.
Right.
And you know what?
It's not to win awards, right?
You know, Carl, I've won awards, but I've also created really interesting marketing things that probably brought in no business whatsoever. Compaq was the best example. We had a $10 million marketing budget to market to public sector. So we had the opportunity to do everything. And I know for a fact I've wasted millions of dollars. At the time, you don't think you're wasting it. You think you're doing what's right to create interesting things, to get the market aware. But like I told you in the first story, you know, the emphasis really should be on, are we helping to drive sales? Are we making the salespeople more effective? One of my mantras also is that marketing's job is to remove obstacles to the sale. Could be broad things like no one knows who we are. Could be our website doesn't speak to our value prop. It could be that customers want examples of testimonials, so we need to then produce testimonials. I always measure myself on how few sales complaints the sales team had.
Oh, that's different.
Yeah, how few complaints. I'm thinking again, like, if they're complaining about things, and salespeople, by definition, will complain.
Sure.
But the less and less that they complain, the more effective I believe that the marketing organization is.
Okay. Very good. And is there a company that you feel is doing this very well? They're doing a good job of bridging the divide between marketing and sales.
I think where we find marketers who understand that it's about sales and that are willing to subjugate their egos for the betterment of the company, then the company is on the right track. So we have some examples of some companies that are members of the Institute for Excellence in Sales. There's a company called Cvent, for example.
Sure, and that's a nice big public brand too.
It is. A local company, event management software, very, very successful company based in Northern Virginia. For the people who are listening around the world.
Tyson's, right?
They are, Tyson's Corner.
Yeah.
Great success story. You could Google them and read all their success. But it seems that they're doing a very good job training their sales organizations, and they're also doing a very good job working between sales and marketing. You know, marketing, doing the right things to prepare the salespeople. People are beginning to know what Cvent does, their value proposition. They're creating great products for their salespeople to sell. So they're definitely an example of a local company that's doing pretty well.
Interesting. And if you don't have an answer to this, no worries at all. But do you happen to understand why they lack that divide?
I don't know the answer to that, but they have a great culture.
Yeah.
So everyone, I mean, for example, when I was at Apple, one of the great things about being at Apple was it was a great culture. A lot of smart people. A lot of people thought that they were bigger than the company, if you will. But it was at the time the best company to be working at. And even now, it's obviously one of the best companies in the world to be working at.
Sure.
But the culture was great where everybody felt they were part of the company's success. Everybody was on board with the mission. And the mission when I was at Apple at the time was Steve Jobs' early mission, which was to get a Macintosh on every desk. So everybody at Apple wanted Apple to be the preeminent computer on everybody's desk. So we all worked towards that. And the vision was clear. It got a little bit murky after Jobs left and people lost a little bit of the way. But the mission was a Macintosh on everyone's desk. So everybody rallied around that. And at Cvent's an example of a company, and I've met a lot of people who work there that are really committed to the company's success. Another company that's local that seems to be similar in the region is a company called WeddingWire. They're based over in Chevy Chase. So for the people listening around the world, that's right outside of Washington, D.C. as well.
And in Maryland.
Maryland, exactly. And they seem to be integrating a lot of their stuff as well.
Great. Great. It sounds like an obvious pattern is that the CEO's really, it helps if the CEO gets an understanding of the principle that they need to be more bottom line oriented in translating their vision to marketing. And so, for example, it's your example, Steve Jobs, it sounds like he had a way of transmuting his vision to both marketing and the bottom line.
Yeah. Yeah. But the one thing that's coming up for me is that everybody was on board with the vision.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's like I'm thinking about where there's been disconnects, and a lot of time where there's been disconnects, people weren't really on board with the mission. Either it wasn't communicated effectively, or there might not have been a vision. You know, it just might have been just standard operations. But in all these great examples, even Compaq, when I was there, it was crystal clear. You know, for example, when I was in Compaq's division, back to where we're talking about government division,
right?
When we started, we were 18 million, and our goal was to get to 152 million. Within 3 years. So everybody knew that number, 152. So you could ask somebody, what's the goal? 152. We want to get to 152 by 1995 or whatever it was. So everything that we were doing, is this going to help us? So we understood the market. We worked together. If there's a vision out there, then there's probably a lot of great examples.
That's a really rare concept, by the way. I've never heard somebody speak their goal that clearly, numerically. unless it's a CFO or something.
No, it was a VP of sales, and everything we did, and now that we're talking about it, it wasn't murky. And we had to, back to the example about the advertising, we had to understand how we're going to get to the 152. Mm-hmm. And my lesson as a marketer was, we're not going to get to the 152 by marketing to the entire government, which was our market. We were going to get to the 152 if we really, really, really focused on those three agencies that I talked about and a couple of the sub-agencies. That was where our best opportunity to get to the 152 was. It wasn't communicating to the entire government. So from a marketing perspective, people need to understand, the marketers need to truly understand who is likely to buy whatever it is the company is selling.
Okay.
Who is the true addressable marketplace? They need to be students of that. And they need to truly, truly understand where their company fits into the marketplace.
That's very actionable. It's a good segue to my next question, which is, what tips and tricks would you provide marketers who are looking to get better?
Carry a recording device. Listen. Don't just take notes. Meet with as many people as possible.
Within the organization?
Within the organization, beyond marketing. Mm-hmm. When I worked at Apple Computer, I had a tremendous boss. And we were in the service division, support, service, and training, and we supported sales. And that's when I first got the understanding that our job was to eliminate any of the obstacles from the sales process. And my boss said, your mission is to sit in every sales meeting that we have. And I would do that. You know, I would just go into the sales meeting, and they would look at me like, why are you here? You're not a quota-carrying sales rep. So I would just kind of sit in the back, listen, take notes. Then eventually they would say, Fred, you know, why don't you just sit over there? And they would put me at the table. And then eventually I started to contribute. I mean, I wouldn't take over the meeting, of course, because I didn't know what was going on in the actual agencies for the clients, if you will, or the prospects. But marketing needs to be in with the sales conversation. They need to understand the marketplace diligently. They need to understand where the marketplace is going. They need to follow the analysts who are tracking the marketplace that they're in. They need to understand the competition. They need to understand why customers are giving us money. In some cases, it's tens, hundreds of millions of dollars or thousands of dollars. They need to understand why that transaction is happening. Why is someone giving up their money for what it is that we're selling? So that's something that they need to become. There's a lot they need to become students of to become truly of value to the company.
Excellent. I think that you mentioned earlier, so I'm going to ask this question. Did Compaq have a very clear vision statement?
It did. We wanted to become the number one computer PC brand, servers, desktops, and laptops. This is, again, in the mid-90s, into a number of selected vertical markets.
So in short, the best computer brand in the world.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
At the time, we wanted to become the number one. And I remember I had a conversation with the CMO at the time. His name was Jim Garrity. And I asked him to give me some insight, which goes into your previous question, which was, how do the marketing people get better? Schedule meetings. You know, I tell young people, when I do a lot of mentoring and tutoring for young people, not just marketing, but people who are new to companies, I say, get to know everyone in a leadership position in the organization. Schedule lunch, schedule breakfast, cup of coffee. Ask the CEO for 15 minutes and come prepared with a succinct list of questions. So you need to truly be of value to the company, not just your job. Okay. So what was the question again?
Well, it was about Compaq and their vision statement.
Right. So I met with the CMO of the company, and he said, you know, Fred, our goal, thank you. He said, our goal is to become the number one brand. And he said, it's not just because we want to be the number one brand. It's because being the number one brand will help us reach our goal of $18 billion or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So his task was very clear. Make us the number one brand, but from a perspective that's going to, again, help us reach our sales goals. So just once again, I mean, you got to be cognizant of why the business exists. And it's typically to sell more. There may be other goals, of course. But typically, it's to achieve a certain number of goals so that you can expand, offer new products, bring your solutions into new markets, you know, things like that.
Great. What resources would you recommend to the marketers and the CEOs on this topic?
So there's some great books. There's a book that came out that I believe set the stage for this in the probably early 2000s, I think. It was called The End of Advertising as We Know It. And then it was a follow-up called The End of Marketing as We Know It. The chronology might have been flipped. The author was Sergio Ziman, Z-Y-M-A-N. and he was the CMO, Chief Marketing Officer for Coca-Cola. And he realized one day that Coca-Cola was spending a ton of money on marketing things, and they weren't increasing their market share. So I'm spending all this money, but there was a flat line with revenue. So he basically came to the conclusion that the marketing stuff that we had been doing historically was no longer valid. And now more and more we're able to measure some of that and truly understand some of the things we're talking about. There's unfortunately still a large degree of legacy. My wife and I watch TV at night, and we'll look at these commercials that we've seen 50 times and still cannot remember who the commercial's for. And that's kind of the way it was in the 90s. You know, I tell the example when I teach marketing classes about that that great little Duracell bunny. That very, I think you and I talked about this.
Yeah.
That high energy. Everyone remembers the Duracell bunny, and it's moving through all this stuff.
That Duracell bunny.
The Duracell bunny. And of course, it's the Energizer bunny.
Right.
So here is Energizer. And that's a true story. I used to talk to people when I taught all the time. And I would be talking to 100 people about the Duracell bunny. And people would be nodding. Yeah, I remember that Duracell bunny. And somebody would say, wasn't it the Energizer Bunny? And I'm like, absolutely.
Gold star for one person
for
in the
one
class.
Person. And then everyone else is like, yeah, you know. Meanwhile, the Energizer company spend, you know, billions. And even today, there's, you know, TV is still the main mechanism to get a message across. Network TV is shrinking, of course, as we all know, but it's still the number one method. And we're watching these commercials, and I'm like, I remember this one for Liberty Mutual, where the people were standing in front of the Liberty Bell across the bay. And I've seen those commercials 50 times, and it didn't even occur to me until last night who they were for. And then I realized, oh, Liberty Mutual, Statue of Liberty. But, you know, if you're spending all that time and energy and money on those things and people aren't getting it, and I'm a professional marketer,
right,
then the thinking needs to change. So the book by Zyman, both those books were books that changed my life, that helped me understand that. You know, you mentioned Lisa Norell, who wrote a good book called The Mindful Marketer. There was a great article that came out in, I think it was the early part of 2000. It was called Ending the War Between Sales and Marketing. Hmm. And it was written by Kotler and Neil Rackham, who wrote Spin Selling. And, you know, basically talking about some of the stuff we're talking about here, about, you know, this war between marketing and sales. And I really believe it's the onus is on marketing to realize why are they even in existence. It's because they need to drive sales.
That's helpful.
Yeah.
That's very helpful. Okay. Well, now's our opportunity to wax poetic a little bit. What do you think the future of this topic will look like?
Well, by the way, it is National Poetry Month.
Ah.
I don't know if you knew that or not. April is...
I didn't know that.
Yep, it's National Poetry Month. So it's good that we're waxing poetic. It's interesting that we're still having this conversation. What is it now, 2015?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it's April 2015.
Give or take a couple of years.
Yeah, well, I'm still dating my checks, 1986. But and your young audience isn't going to understand that. But will we still continue to have these conversations? Probably, because a lot of people still want to hold on to the romance of what advertising and marketing might have been. Mm-hmm. And they're still thinking even in terms of the wrong thing, like the question we started out the conversation with. When a client said to me, should I be investing in buying 15,000 Twitter followers? And that was almost the same question as, should we be spending $1 million on advertising to the government? It's the same exact question. It's coming from the wrong place. The question should have been, how can I drive more sales to my target audiences? Or to put it in a marketing term, what should marketing be doing to drive more sales to my target audience as compared to what interesting and compelling marketing things should I be able to do?
Right. It's interesting. There might be a little bit of a personality divide as a pattern between marketers and particularly, quote, advertisers who want to be creative. Versus the CEO who knows that if people want to keep getting paid, then they need to keep making more money.
Let's call a spade a spade. People who are in marketing, a lot of times they ask me, how can they make more money and advance their career? And I say one of two things, go into sales or go work for yourself and create a company that's going to have value. Marketing's fun. Like I said, having a $10 million budget was fun. We got to do interesting things. You know, you go on photo shoots.
Work with the Mad Men on Madison Avenue.
Work with the Mad Men on Madison Avenue. You're working with interesting, creative people. You're coming up with new things, you know, to try to market your product and your company more effectively. But it really comes down to sales. And we created the Institute for Excellence in Sales about 4 years ago. And there's a number of things that I've learned. And I've always been a student of sales because I know it's about sales. But having spent the last 4 years with some of the true thought leaders in the world, I've learned a bunch of things in some of the top sales organizations in the world. Sales is hard. The difference between sales and marketing is I could create this amazing marketing activity. We get 100 people in the room for a seminar. I'll go to sleep at night. But if there's no customers in that room or truly solid prospects, then the salespeople aren't going to go to sleep because we provided no value to them. So it's hence why you can measure sales and the sales performance. Did I hit my quota or did I not hit my quota? You know, it's very, very clear. In marketing, you could be reducing all these things, but you know, do they really make an impact on the main goal, which is to drive business? You don't always know that.
They can hide a little bit.
Yeah, you could say, well, you know, because of the weather, you know, or because, well, something happened along the way. But at the end of the day, it's just an excuse.
Right.
And you can hide behind it. And the reality is it's about hitting that revenue number and time again. And again, I go back to the fact that I've never had a conversation with the CEO. No, they'll ask me, was this a good program? Or did you think it achieved the goal you originally set it out to achieve? But they never ask about the strategy. It's always about how is this helping our sales team more effective? Because I need to report to our board or to our shareholders next quarter that we reached our goal of 14 million or whatever it was. Not right. Our goal of 400 replies, you know, to an email or 600,000 Twitter followers.
Right.
Still.
Well, I appreciate you sharing the insights from the IESBD. I'm very curious about that. I know that you've gotten some amazing speakers. You have amazing experience, so you are yourself an amazing speaker. However, I'm also excited about the insights that you will have learned from 4 years of guests at the IESBD. Was there a speaker who really stands out as providing insights that are relevant to this topic?
Yes. We've been fortunate to have some amazing speakers. And I'll just mention a couple of them. Colleen Stanley, who you mentioned. 2 months ago, we had a gentleman known as the Sales Hunter. His name is Mark Hunter. He's out of Omaha, Nebraska. Spoke on accelerated prospecting. Fabulous. Brilliant. People walked away with tremendous things they could do that day. The Institute for Excellence in Sales, we have programs for selling professionals in the D.C. region and beyond as well. We get people who come as far as Baltimore, people come from Philly down for our programs. We're going to be expanding at the end of the year. So three basic topics: how to improve your sales process, how to become a better selling professional, and sales tactics. I'll give you one quick thought that relates to this. A lot of people say that the concept of cold calling is dead. Well, I would agree. Going through the yellow pages and just randomly calling people, but it's so much more powerful to be able to call someone and know what you're talking about. So to give you a perspective, when we created the Institute for Excellence in Sales, one reason why we created it was because people said it's so much harder to sell today for a couple reasons. Customers know more about you than you know about your product in a lot of cases. If someone wants to know the best social media monitoring software, they can just go to your search engine, Google, type in best social media monitoring software.
Right.
A million pages are going to come up, you know, including the top 10 solutions. So the customer can then do all his or her research ahead of time before you, the sales guy for whatever the tool is, gives them a call. So you're automatically at a disadvantage. And it's the same way with everything you need to buy these days, from consumer products like cars and, you know, devices that they might sell at Best Buy or, you know, music or TV or things related to that, all the way through enterprise type software. So our original notion was that it's harder because of that. And also people aren't answering their phones like they used to. And people are busier. And a lot of people are working from the home office now who are decision makers. So they're not all at headquarters. And also because of security, it's harder to get into, to get in certain buildings. And people don't want to take your meeting anymore because you could just tell them they already know the information. You know, they don't need to be educated on social media monitoring software. Just tell me why yours is the best if you get the opportunity. So we always had this notion that sales is much harder because of those reasons. One of our speakers, conversely, said that she believes that sales is much easier now because we know every possible thing about our prospect before we go into the meeting. With LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter and things like that, if I were to meet you, let's say you're a CFO, chief financial officer at a company, by going to your LinkedIn page, by just Googling you, I can find out tons of things about you. And as a selling professional, I can be prepared to communicate to you things about yourself and why our solution might be the best solution for you and struggles that your company has faced. It wasn't like that 10, 15, 30 years ago when you had to like do real research. You know, now you could research. If your meeting's at 10 o'clock at 9:50 in your car, you can find everything you need to know about the customer. So some people say conversely, it's easier. Some people say conversely, it's harder.
Yeah. Well, if you think of it as easier, that's probably a more helpful attitude.
The other thing too, we were talking about this this morning. I had a meeting with a client. There's estimates that the number of salespeople in the marketplace will decrease by upwards of 60 to 80%
wow.
in the next 5-10 years, mainly because customers are in charge. Customers have access to all the information that they need within seconds, and they can do comparison shopping. For example, I mean, if you're buying a car today, you have information that can show you every car in the United States and where it's located and its cost and mileage and Carfax and all those types of things. So do I need someone to sell me a car when, you know, I could just type in best Ford Focus 2010 within 50 miles of Washington, D.C., and it'll pinpoint within seconds the 7 cars that are available. So then, you know, do I need car salespeople? And then even in enterprise-type technology, it's beholden on the marketer to have that information out there for the customer.
Sure. Oh, that's great. Thank you. Okay. What's the next big project for you?
Well, we really want to grow the Institute for Excellence in Sales. Mm-hmm. With Diamond Marketing, obviously, it's to help our clients reach their goals. So with Diamond Marketing, strategic marketing, we're always looking for new technology companies that want to grow. And if the CEO has a vision for how he wants to grow, that is our sweet spot in all areas of technology, enterprise software, et cetera. Institute for Excellence in Sales, we want to grow that as well. We're looking to grow into more regions. No one has ever done it the way we're doing it. There's a lot of people who do sales seminars and things like that, mm-hmm. but they usually do it as a sales tactic to get their own business.
Right.
We're bringing the best and the brightest, people who are saying new and interesting things to the marketplace to really raise the bar of the selling professional and to help selling professionals get better at what they do. We're big believers in sales. We believe that sales is a noble purpose. We actually had a tremendous speaker. I think it was last 2 falls ago. Her name was Lisa Earl McLeod, based out of Atlanta, wrote a book called Selling with Noble Purpose. Fabulous speaker. And her whole premise was that if you're committed to what it is that you're selling for some underlying reason, your likelihood in being more successful will grow. So
she has a noble name as well.
Lisa Earl McLeod, she does.
Hi.
And but she's a was an absolutely fabulous speaker as well. So
excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. By the way, are there plans on what location you will expand to next?
Yeah, we're looking to expand into Atlanta and Chicago, places where there are professional corporate enterprise. We really are of service to enterprise selling professionals, B2B.
Sure.
You know, people who are selling business to business and those type of environments. So, for example, we don't get many people who work on the floor at Best Buy.
Right. You're probably not training car salesmen, really.
Nope. But we get fleet salespeople, people who work fleet for some big brands, or people who sell some of the bigger brands. We've had people who come from Mercedes dealerships, where it's a different type of a sale.
Sure.
You know, you need a different level of communication to the customer. But yeah, typically it's not cars. Typically it's technology, financial services. We have people from Capital One, New York Life, moving companies, media companies, people from Discovery have come to our programs. People who sell to the government, government contracting, of course. People who sell media, people who sell large-scale food services like Sodexo and Cisco and companies like that. And of course, technology.
Perfect. What is the best place for people to learn more and to reach you?
DiamondStrategicMarketing.com, or they could just go to Fred Diamond, FREDDIAMOND.com. And the Institute for Excellence in Sales, our website is the number 4, E, S as in Sam, B, D, Excellent Sales Business Development, the number 4, ESBD.
And I'll have links to everything we've mentioned, including your sites, in the show notes at spiralmarketing.com for this episode.
Awesome. That would be great.
Yeah. Fred, thanks so much for being on the show. This was excellent.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun. You ask great questions and love what you're doing. You're bringing value to the marketer and also to the business owner who's listening to your podcasts. And people should be looking and researching ways to get better at what they do. The competition's getting tougher for jobs. And it's getting tougher to stand out. So by listening and reading what you're doing, it's good stuff.
Thank you. I appreciate that.